8. The Essentosh. 1. Kel sat up, a scream still lodged in his throat. Sweat traced the lines of his face as he blinked away the nightmare. In his dreams, Red London was burning. He could still smell the smoke now that he was awake, and it took him a moment to realize that it wasn't simply an echo trailing him out of sleep. The bedsheets were singed where he was gripping them. He had somehow summoned fire in his sleep. Kel stared down at his hands, the knuckles white. It had been years since his control had faltered. Kel threw off the covers, and he was halfway to his feet when he heard the cascade of sound beyond the windows, the trumpets and bells, the carriages and shouts. The tournament. His blood hummed as he dressed, turning his coat inside out several times, assuring himself that Kamarov's silver jacket hadn't been swallowed up by the infinite folds of fabric, before returning it to its royal red and heading downstairs. He put in a cursory appearance at breakfast, nodding to the king and queen and wishing wry luck as a flurry of attendants swirled around the prince with final plans, notes, and questions.
"Where do you think you're going?"
asked the king as Kel palmed a sweet bun and turned toward the door.
"Sir?"
he asked, glancing back.
"This is a royal event, Kel. You are expected to attend."
"Of course," he swallowed. Rai shot him a look that said, "I've gotten you this far, don't blow it now." And if he did, would Rai have to call Castars back in to make another appearance? It would be too risky, trading the roles again in time for the fights, and Kel had a feeling Castars' charm wouldn't save him in the ring. Kel fumbled for an excuse.
"It's just, I didn't think it wise for me to stand with the royal family."
"And why is that?" demanded King Maxim.
The queen's gaze drifted in his direction, glancing off his shoulder, and Kel had to bite back the urge to point out that he wasn't actually a member of the royal family, as the last 4 months had made abundantly clear. But Rai's look was a warning.
"Well," said Kel, scrambling for an explanation, "for the prince's safety, it's one thing to put me on display with dignitaries and champions in the company of royals, Your Highness. But you've said yourself that I'm a target."
The prince gave a small, encouraging nod, and Kel pressed on.
"Is it really wise to put me so close to Rai in such a public forum? I was hoping to stake out a less conspicuous place, in case I'm needed. Somewhere with a good view of the royal podium, but not upon it."
The king's gaze narrowed in thought. The queen's gaze returned to her tea.
"Well thought," said Maxim grudgingly. "But keep Staff or Hastra with you at all times," he warned. "No wandering off."
Kel managed a smile.
"There's nowhere I'd rather be."
And with that, he slipped out.
"The king does know about your role," said Hastra as they walked down the hall. "Doesn't he?"
Kel shot the young guard a glance.
"Of course," he said casually, and then, on a whim, he added, "But the queen does not. Her nerves couldn't handle the strain."
Hastra nodded knowingly.
"She hasn't been the same, has she?" he whispered. "Not since that night."
Kel straightened and quickened his step.
"None of us have."
When they reached the steps into the basin, Kel paused.
"You know the plan?"
"Yes, sir,"
said Hastra. He flashed an excited smile and disappeared. Kel shrugged off his coat and turned it inside out as he descended into the basin, where he'd already drawn a shortcut on the glassy stone wall. His mask was sitting in its box atop the table, along with a note from his brother. "Keep this and your head on your shoulders." Kel shrugged Kamarov's silver jacket on and opened the box. The mask waited within, its surface polished to mirror clarity, sharpening Kel's reflection until it looked like it belonged to someone else. Beside the box sat a piece of rolled red fabric, and when Kel smoothed it out, he saw it was a new pennant. The two roses had been replaced by twin lions, black and white,
and lined with gold against the crimson ground. Kel smiled and tugged the mask on over his head, his reddish hair and two-toned eyes vanishing behind the silvery surface.
"Master Kamarov," said Staff when he stepped out into the morning air, "are you ready?"
"I am," he answered in Arnesian, the edges of his voice muffled and smoothed by the metal. They started up the steps, and when they reached the top, Kel waited while the guard vanished, then reappeared a moment later to confirm the path was clear. Or rather, covered. The steps were sheltered by the palace's foundation, running from river to street, and market stalls crowded the banks, obstructing the path. By the time Kel stepped out of the palace's shadow, slipped between the tents and onto the main road, the Antare Royal was left behind. Kamarov Lost had taken his place. He might have been a different man, but he was still tall, lean, and dressed in silver from mask to boot, and the eyes of the crowd quickly registered the magician in their midst. But after the first wave, Kel didn't cringe from the attention. Instead of trying to embody Rai, he embodied a version of himself, one who didn't fear the public eye, one who had power and nothing to hide. And soon he fell into an easy, confident stride. As he made his way with the crowd toward the central stadium, Staff hung back, blending in with the other guards who lined the road at regular intervals and walked among the throngs of people. Kel smiled as he mounted the bridge path from the banks to the largest of the three floating arenas. Last night he'd imagined feeling the ground move beneath him, but that might have been the wine, because this morning, as he reached the archway to the arena floor, it felt solid as earth beneath his feet. Half a dozen other men and women, all Arnesian, were already gathered in the corridor. The magicians from Pharaoh and Vesk must be assembled in their own halls, waiting to make their grand entrance. Like Kel, they were decked out in their official tournament attire, with elegant coats or cloaks, and, of course, helmets. He recognized Kisimir's coiled hair behind a cat-like mask, Losin a step behind her, as if he were an actual shadow. Beside them was Brost's massive form, his features barely obscured by the simple strip of dark metal over his eyes. And there, behind a mask of scales trimmed in blue, stood Alucard. The captain's gaze drifted over Kel, and he felt himself tense. But of course, where Kel saw a foe, Alucard would have seen only a stranger in a silver mask, and one who'd obviously introduced himself at the banner night because Alucard tipped his head with an arrogant smile. Kel nodded back, secretly hoping their paths might cross in the ring. Jannar appeared on a gust of wind against Kel's back, slipping past him with a breezy chuckle before knocking shoulders with Alucard. More footsteps sounded in the tunnel, and Kel turned to see the last few Arnesians join the group, the dark shape of Stassian Elsor at the rear. He was long and lean, his face entirely hidden by a demon's mask. For an instant, Kel's breath caught, but Rai was right. Kel was determined to see Lila Bard in every black-clad form, every smirking shadow. Stassian Elsor's eyes were shadowed by the mask, but up close, the demon's face was different. The horns arcing back and a skeletal jawbone collaring mouth and throat. A lock of hair, a shade darker than Lila's, traced a line like a crack between the magician's shaded brown eyes. And though his mouth was visible between the demon's teeth, Stassian didn't smile, only stared at Kel. Kamarov.
"Fel Shos," said Kel. "Good luck."
"And you," replied Stassian simply, his voice nearly swallowed by the sudden flare of trumpets. Kel twisted back to the archways as the gate swung open and the ceremonies began.